couple of others after that, if he got Blaze ripped enough to pass out. Or maybe he'd hook up with some dumb little hottie, even if Blaze was sober enough to realize what was happening. That might be fun, too. Oh, he knew she'd make a scene, but he'd just ignore her and have Teddy or Lance kick her out. He knew she'd come back. She always came back, begging and crying. She was so damn predictable. And she whined all the damn time. Not like Miss Tight Little Body just down the beach. He'd been trying hard not to think about Ronnie. So she didn't like him. So she wanted to spend time with Richie Rich, the brake shop prince. She probably wasn't going to put out anyway. She's probably a frigid little tease. Even so, he couldn't figure out where he'd gone wrong with her or how she'd seemed to see right through him. He was better off without her. He didn't need her. He didn't need anyone, which made him wonder why he continued to watch her or cared in the slightest that she was hanging out with Will. Of course, that made the whole thing a little more interesting, if only because he knew all about Will's weak spot. He could have some fun with that, just like he was going to have fun tonight. Chapter 23. Will. For Will, the summer was passing way too quickly. Between working at the garage and spending most of his remaining free time with Ronnie, the days seemed to fly by. As August approached, he found himself growing increasingly anxious at the thought that in a few weeks she'd be heading back to New York and he'd be off to Vanderbilt. She'd become part of his life. In many ways, the best part. Even though he didn't always understand her, their differences somehow seemed to make their relationship stronger. They had argued over his request to accompany her to court, which she had adamantly refused. But he remembered her surprise when she found him waiting for her outside the courthouse with a bouquet of flowers. He knew she was upset that the charges had not been dropped. Her next court appearance was scheduled on August 28th, 3 days after he'd leave for college, but knew he'd done the right thing by showing up when she accepted the bouquet with a shy kiss. She surprised him by getting a part-time job at the aquarium. She didn't tell him about her plans beforehand or ask if he could put in a good word for her. Frankly, he hadn't even realized she'd wanted a job. When he'd asked her about it afterward, she'd explained, "You're working during the day, and my dad and Jonah are making a stained glass window. I needed something to do. And besides, I want to pay for the lawyer myself. It's not like my dad has a lot of money." When he picked her up after her first day of work, however, he noticed her skin had an almost greenish tint to it. "I had to feed the otters," she confessed. "Have you ever stuck your hand into a bucket of dead, slimy fish? It's disgusting." They talked endlessly. There didn't seem to be enough time in the world to share everything they wanted to. Sometimes it was simply talk to fill the quiet moments, when they debated their favorite movies, for instance, or when she told him that even though she was a vegetarian, she still hadn't decided whether eggs or milk counted. But at other times, the conversation turned serious. She told him more about her memories of playing the piano and her relationship with her dad. He admitted that he sometimes resented the fact that he felt a responsibility to be the kind of person his mom insisted he be. They talked about her brother, Jonah, and his sister, Megan, and speculated and dreamed about where they'd end up in life. For him, the future seemed tidily planned. 4 years at Vanderbilt, and after graduation he'd gain some experience working for another firm before coming back to run his dad's business. Yet even as he recited the plan, he could hear his mom's voice whispering her approval, and he found himself wondering whether it was what he really wanted. As for Ronnie, she admitted that she wasn't sure what the following year or two would bring. The uncertainty didn't seem to frighten her, though, which made him admire her even more. Later, when he reflected on their respective plans, he was struck by the realization that of the two of them, she was more in charge of her own destiny than he was. Despite the cages that had been built to guard the turtle nests up and down the beach, raccoons had burrowed beneath the wire mesh and destroyed 6 nests. As soon as Ronnie learned what happened, she insisted they take turns guarding the nest behind her house. There was no reason for both of them to be there all night, but they spent most nights holding each other, kissing, and talking quietly until long after midnight. Scott, of course, couldn't understand it at all. More than once, Will was late for practice, and he'd arrived to see Scott pacing in agitation, wondering what had gotten into his friend. At work, in the rare instances that Scott asked how things were going with Ronnie, Will didn't volunteer much. He knew Scott wasn't asking because he was truly interested. Scott did his best to keep Will's attention focused on the upcoming beach volleyball tournament, usually pretending either that Will would come to his senses soon or that Ronnie didn't exist. Ronnie had been right about his mom, though. While she hadn't said anything directly to him about his new relationship, he read her disapproval in the way she had to force a smile at the mention of Ronnie's name and in the almost formal demeanor she adopted when he brought Ronnie to the house. She never asked about Ronnie, and when he said something about her, about how much fun they'd had or how smart she was or how she understood him better than anyone, his mom would say things like, "You're going to be at Vanderbilt soon, and long-distance relationships are hard," or would even wonder aloud if he thought they were spending too much time together. He hated when she said those things. It was all he could do not to snap at her, because he knew she was being unfair. Unlike practically everyone else Will knew, Ronnie didn't drink or curse or gossip, and they hadn't gone any further than kissing, but he knew intuitively those things wouldn't matter to his mom. She was locked into her prejudices, so any attempt to change her opinion of Ronnie would be pointless. Frustrated, he started making excuses to stay away from the house as much as possible, not only because of the way his mom felt about Ronnie, but because of the way he was beginning to feel about his mom. And about himself, of course, for failing to call her on it. Other than Ronnie's preoccupation with her upcoming court appearance, the only blemish on their largely idyllic summer was the continuing presence of Marcus. Though they'd mostly been able to avoid him, it was sometimes impossible. When they did run into him, Marcus always seemed to find a way to provoke Will, usually with a reference to Scott. Will felt paralyzed. If he overreacted, Marcus might go to the police. If he did nothing, he felt ashamed. Here he was, dating a girl who'd stood in court and admitted her guilt, and the fact that he couldn't summon the courage to do the same had started to torment him. He tried talking to Scott about coming clean and going to the police, but Scott had rejected the idea. And in his own indirect way, he never let Will forget what he'd done for him and his family that horrible day when Mikey died. Will admitted Scott had been heroic, but as the summer wore on, he began to wonder whether a previous good deed meant a later bad one should be completely overlooked, and in his darkest moments, whether he could bear the true cost of Scott's friendship. One night in early August, Will agreed to take Ronnie out to the beach to hunt for spider crabs. "I told you I don't like crabs," Ronnie squealed, grabbing hold of Will's arm. He laughed. "They're just spider crabs. They won't hurt you." She squinched up her nose. "They're like creepy, crawly bugs from outer space." "You're forgetting that doing this was your idea." "No, it was Jonah's idea. He said it was fun, which serves me right for listening to someone who learns about life by watching cartoons." "I would think someone who feeds slimy fish to otters wouldn't be bothered by a few harmless crabs on the beach." He swept his flashlight across the ground, illuminating the fast-moving creatures. She scanned the sand frantically, lest another crab dart near her foot. "First off, there aren't a few harmless crabs. There are hundreds of them. Second, if I'd known that this is what happens to the beach at night, I would have made you sleep by the turtle nest every night. So I'm a little angry at you for hiding this fact. And third, even though I work at the aquarium, it doesn't mean that I enjoy having crabs run over my feet. He did his best to keep a straight face, but it was too hard. When she looked up, she caught his expression. Stop smirking. It's not funny. Yes, it is. I mean, there must be 20 little kids and their parents out here doing the same thing we are. It's not my fault if their parents lack common sense. Do you want to go back? No, it's fine, she said. You've already lured me out here into the middle of the infestation. I might as well put up with it. You do know we've been walking the beach a lot lately. I know. So again, thank you for bringing the flashlight and ruining the memories. Fine, he said, turning it off. She dug her nails into his arm. What are you doing? Turn it back on. You've made it perfectly clear you don't like the flashlight. But if you turn it off, then I won't see them. Right. Which means they might be surrounding me right now. Turn it back on, she pleaded. He did, and as they started down the beach, he laughed. One day, I'm going to figure you out. I don't think so. If you haven't done it yet, it just might be beyond you. That could be true, he admitted. He draped an arm around her. You still haven't told me if you're going to come to my sister's wedding. That's because I haven't decided yet. I want you to meet Megan. She's great. It's not your sister I'm worried about. I just don't think your mom wants me to come. So, it's not her wedding. My sister wants you there. You've talked to her about me? Of course. What did you say? The truth? That you think I'm pasty? He squinted at her. Are you still thinking about that? No, I've forgotten all about it. He snorted. Okay, to answer your question, no, I didn't say you were pasty. I said you used to be pasty. She elbowed him in the ribs, and he pretended to beg for mercy. I'm kidding, I'm kidding. I would never say that. What did you tell her then? He stopped, turning her to face him. Like I said, I told her the truth. That you're smart and funny and easy to be with and beautiful. Oh, well, that's okay then. You're not going to say that you love me, too. I'm not sure I can love such a needy guy, she teased. She slipped her arms around him. Or you can take that comment as payback for letting crabs run over my toes. Of course I love you. They kissed before resuming their walk. They'd almost reached the pier and were about to turn around when they saw Scott, Ashley, and Cassie approaching from the other direction. Ronnie tensed under his arm as Scott veered off to intercept them. There you are, man, Scott called out when he was close. He stopped in front of them. I've been texting you all night. Will drew his arm tighter around Ronnie. Sorry, I left my phone at Ronnie's. What's up? As he answered, he could feel Ashley staring at Ronnie from a distance. I got calls from five of the teams that are going to be in the tournament, and they want to do some pre-tournament scrimmaging. They're all pretty good, and they want to put a mini boot camp together to get everyone ready to face Landry and Tyson. Lots of practice, lots of drills, lots of games. We're even thinking about switching up the teams now and then to improve our reaction times, since we all have different styles. When are they coming? Whenever we're ready, but we were thinking this week. How long are they going to be here? I don't know, 3 or 4 days? Pretty much right up until the tournament. I know you got wedding stuff and rehearsals, but we can work around all that. He thought again about the fact that his time with Ronnie would soon be coming to an end. 3 or 4 days? Scott frowned. Come on, man, this is just what we need to do to get ready. Don't you think we're ready now? What's gotten into you? You know how many coaches from the West Coast are coming to watch the tournament? He pointed a finger at Will. You might not need a volleyball scholarship to go to college, but I do, and this is the only chance they'll get to see me play. Will hesitated. Let me think about it, okay? You want to think about it? I have to talk to my dad first. I can't just agree to take off work for 4 days on such short notice without asking him. And I don't think you can either. Scott glanced at Ronnie. Are you sure that work is what this is all about? Will recognized the challenge but didn't want to get into it with Scott right then. Scott, too, seemed to think better of it and took a step back. All right, fine. Talk to your dad, whatever, he said. Maybe you'll find a way to squeeze it into your schedule. With that, he turned away, walking off without a backward glance. Will, unsure what else to do, started leading Ronnie back to her house. They were out of earshot of Scott when Ronnie wrapped her arm around his waist and asked, "Was he talking about the tournament you told me about?" Will nodded. "Next weekend, the day after my sister's wedding." "On a Sunday?" He nodded. "It's a 2-day tournament, but the women play on Saturday." Ronnie thought about that. "And he needs a volleyball scholarship to go to college?" "It would definitely help." She pulled him to a stop. "Then make time for this boot camp thing. Practice and drill. Do whatever you have to do to get ready. He's your friend, right? We'll still find time to be together, even if both of us have to sit out by the turtle nest. I can go to work tired." As she spoke, Will could only think how beautiful she was and how much he was going to miss her. "What's going to happen to us, Ronnie, at the end of the summer?" He searched her face. "You're going to go to college," Ronnie answered, looking away. "And I'll go back to New York." He tilted her face up to his. "You know what I mean." "Yes," she said. "I know perfectly what you mean. But I don't know what you want me to say. I don't know what either of us can say. How about, I don't want it to end?" Her eyes were sea green, tender in apology. "I don't want it to end," she repeated softly. Though it was what he'd wanted to hear, and she obviously meant it, he realized what she'd already known. That speaking the words, even if true, had little power to change the inevitable, or even make him feel much better. "I'm going to come to New York to visit," he promised. "I hope you do. And I want you to come to Tennessee." "I suppose I could handle another trip down south if I had a good reason to go." He smiled as they began moving down the beach. "I'll tell you what. I'll do everything Scott wants to get ready for the tournament if you agree to come with me to my sister's wedding. In other words, you're going to do what you should be doing anyway, and in exchange, you get what you want." It wasn't quite the way he would have phrased it, but she had a point. "Yeah," he said. "I guess that's it. Anything else, since you're driving such a hard bargain?" "Now that you mention it, there is. I want you to try to talk some sense into Blaze."
"I've already tried to talk to her."
"I know, but that was what, 6 weeks ago?" "She's seen us together, so she knows you're not interested in Marcus. And she's had time to get over it."
"She's not going to tell the truth," Ronnie countered. "That means she'd get in trouble."
"How? What would she be charged with?" "The point is, I don't want you to get in trouble for something you didn't do. The owner isn't listening, the DA isn't listening, and I'm not saying that Blaze is going to listen either, but I don't see what other choice you have if you want to get out from under this thing."
"It's not going to work," Ronnie insisted.
"Maybe not, but I think it's worth a try. I've known her a long time, and she wasn't always like this. Maybe there's still something deep down inside her that knows she's doing the wrong thing, and all she needs is a good reason to try to make it better." Though she didn't agree, she didn't disagree either, and they walked back toward the house in relative silence. When they got close, Will could see light flooding out the open door of the workshop.
"Is your dad still working on the window tonight?"
"Looks that way," she said.
"May I see it?"
"Why not?"
Together, they headed toward the ramshackle building. Once inside, Will saw a bare light bulb dangling from an extension cord over a large work table in the center of the room.
"I guess he's not here," Ronnie said, looking around.
"Is that the window?" Will asked, approaching the work table.
"It's huge.
Ronnie moved to his side. It's amazing, isn't it? It's for the church they're rebuilding down the street. You didn't tell me that. His voice sounded strained, even to his own ears. I didn't think it was important, she said automatically. Why? Is it important? Will forced his mind away from images of Scott and the fire. Not really, he said quickly, pretending to inspect the glass. I just didn't realize your dad had the ability to make something so intricate. I didn't either. Neither did he, until he started anyway. But he told me it was important to him, so maybe that has something to do with it. Why was it so important to him? As Ronnie related the story her dad had told her, Will stared at the window, remembering what Scott had done, and of course what he hadn't done. She must have seen something in his face because when she finished, she seemed to be studying him. What are you thinking about? He ran his hand over the glass before he answered. Do you ever wonder what it means to be a friend? I'm not sure what you mean. He looked over at her. How far would you go to protect a friend? She hesitated. I suppose that depends on what the friend did, and how serious it was. She put a hand on his back. What aren't you telling me? When he didn't answer, she scooted closer to him. In the end, you should always do the right thing, even if it's hard. I know that might not help you, and that the right thing isn't always so easy to figure out, at least on the surface anyway. But even when I was justifying to myself that stealing was no big deal, I knew it was wrong. It was making me feel dark inside. She brought her face close to his, and he caught the scent of sand and sea on her skin. I didn't fight the charges because something inside me knew that what I'd been doing was wrong. Some people can live with that as long as they get away with it. They see shades of gray where I see black and white. But I'm not that kind of person. And I don't think you are either. Will's gaze slid away from hers. He wanted to tell her, longed to tell her everything since he knew she was right, but he couldn't seem to find the words. She understood him in ways that no one else ever had. He could learn from her, he thought. He would be a better person with her by his side. In many ways, he needed her. When he forced himself to nod, she rested her head against his shoulder. When they finally left the shed, he reached out to stop her before she headed back to her house. He pulled her close and began to kiss her. First her lips, then her cheek, and then her neck. Her skin was like fire, as if she'd been lying in the sun for hours, and when he kissed her lips again, he felt her fold her body into his. He buried his hands in her hair, continuing to kiss her as he slowly backed her against the wall of the workshop. He loved her. He wanted her. And as they continued to kiss, he could feel her arms moving over his back and shoulders. Her touch was electric against his skin, her breath hot against his, and he felt himself slipping away to a place governed only by his senses. His hands were roving over her back and stomach when he finally felt Ronnie place her hands on his chest and push him away. Please, she breathed. We've got to stop. Why? Because I don't want my dad to catch us. He might be watching us from the window right now. We're just kissing. Yeah, and we just sort of like each other, too. She laughed. A languid smile spread over his face. What? We weren't just kissing? I'm just saying that it felt like what we were doing was leading up to something more, she said, straightening her shirt. And the problem is? Her expression told him to stop playing games, and he knew she had a point, even if it wasn't what he wanted. You're right, he sighed, dropping his hands into a loose circle around her waist. I'll try to control myself. She kissed him on the cheek. I have complete confidence in you. Gee, thanks, he groaned. She winked. I'm going to go check on my dad, okay? Okay. I gotta be at work early tomorrow anyway. She smiled. Too bad. I don't have to be at work until 10. Are they still having you feed the otters? They'd starve without me. I'm pretty much indispensable now. He laughed. Have I told you that I think you're a keeper? I don't think anyone's ever said that to me. But just so you know, you're not so bad to have around either.
Chapter 24. Ronnie. Ronnie watched Will walk off before making her way back to the house, thinking about the things he'd said and wondering if he was right about Blaze. The upcoming court date had been weighing on her all summer. She sometimes wondered whether the anticipation of the possible punishment was worse than the punishment itself. As the weeks had rolled by, she'd been waking up in the middle of the night and finding it impossible to go back to sleep. It wasn't that she was terrified of going to prison. She doubted that she'd be locked up. But she fretted that these crimes would follow her forever. Would she have to reveal her history to a college she might attend? Did she have to tell her future employers? Would she be able to get a job teaching? She didn't know whether she'd attend college or even wanted to become a teacher, but the fear remained. Would this haunt her forever? Her lawyer didn't think so, but she wouldn't promise anything. And the wedding. It was easy for Will to ask her to come, to assume it was no big deal. But she knew that Susan didn't want her there, and the last thing she wanted was to be some sort of distraction. This was supposed to be Megan's day. Reaching the back porch, she was about to step inside when she heard the rocking chair squeak. She jumped back in terror, only to see Jonah watching her. That was so gross. What are you doing out here? She demanded, her heart still racing. Watching you and Will. Like I said, that was really gross. He made a point to shiver. You were spying on us? It was kind of hard not to. You were right there by the workshop with Will. It looked like he was practically squishing you to death. He wasn't, Ronnie assured him. I'm just saying how it looked. She smiled. You'll understand when you're a little older. Jonah shook his head. I understand exactly what you were doing. I've seen movies. I just think it's gross. You've already said that, she pointed out. That seemed to stop him for a second. Where's he going? Home. He's got work tomorrow. Are you going to watch The Turtle Nest tonight? Because you don't have to. Dad said that we could watch it tonight. You convinced Dad to sleep outside? He wants to. He thinks it'll be fun. I doubt it, she thought. It's fine with me. I've already got my stuff ready. Sleeping bag, lantern, juices, sandwiches, a box of Ritz crackers, marshmallows, potato chips, cookies, and a tennis racket. You're going to play tennis? In case the raccoon comes, you know, if it tries to attack us. It's not going to attack you. Really? He sounded almost disappointed. Well, maybe it is a good idea, Ronnie agreed. Just in case. You never know. He scratched his head. That's what I thought, too. She pointed toward the workshop. The window looks beautiful, by the way. Thanks, Jonah said. Dad wants to make sure every single piece is perfect. He makes me do some pieces 2 or 3 times, but I'm getting pretty good. It looks like it. But it gets hot, especially when he runs the kiln. It's like an oven. It is an oven, she thought, but she didn't correct him. That's too bad. How's the whole cookie war going? It's fine. I just have to eat them when he's napping. Dad doesn't nap. He does now, every afternoon for a couple of hours. Sometimes I have to shake him pretty hard to wake him up. She stared at her brother before peering through the window into the house. Where is Dad, by the way? He's at the church. Pastor Harris came by earlier. He's been coming by a lot lately. Him and Dad like to talk. They're friends. I know, but I think he just used that as an excuse. I think Dad went to play the piano. What piano? Ronnie asked, puzzled. It got delivered to the church last week. Dad's been going over there to play.
He has, huh?
Hold on, he said. I'm not sure I was supposed to tell you that. Maybe you should forget I said it.
Why shouldn't you tell me?
Because you might yell at him again.
I'm not going to yell at him, Ronnie protested. When was the last time I yelled at him?
When he was playing the piano. Remember?
Oh, yeah, she thought. The kid has an amazing memory.
Well, I'm not going to yell at him. Good, because I don't want you to yell at him. We're supposed to go to Fort Fisher tomorrow, and I want him to be in a good mood.
How long has he been at the church?
I don't know. Feels like hours. That's why I was out here. I was waiting for him, and then you showed up with Will and started making out.
We were just kissing.
No, I don't think so. You were definitely making out, Jonah said with conviction.
Have you had any dinner yet? She asked, eager to change the subject.
I was waiting for Dad.
Do you want me to make you a couple of hot dogs?
With ketchup only? He pressed.
She sighed. Sure.
I thought you didn't even like to touch them.
You know, it's funny. I've been handling a lot of dead fish lately, so a hot dog doesn't strike me as all that disgusting anymore. He smiled.
Will you bring me to the aquarium one time so I can watch you feed the otters?
If you want, I might even be able to let you feed them.
Really?
Jonah's voice rose with excitement.
I think so.
I'll have to ask, of course, but they let some of the student groups do it, so I don't think it would be a problem. His face lit up.
Wow, thanks.
Then, getting up from the rocking chair, he added,
Oh, by the way, you owe me $10.
For what?
Hello? For not telling Dad about what Will and you were doing? Duh.
Are you serious? Even though I'm going to make you dinner?
Come on. You work and I'm poor.
You obviously think I earn far more than I do. I don't have $10. Everything I've earned has gone to help pay for my lawyer. He thought about that.
How about $5 then?
You'd take $5 from me even though I just told you I don't even have $10 to my name? Ronnie feigned outrage. He thought about that.
How about $2?
How about $1? He smiled.
Deal.
After making Jonah his dinner, he wanted the hot dogs boiled, not microwaved. Ronnie headed down to the beach toward the church. It wasn't far, but it lay in the opposite direction from the route she usually walked, and she'd barely noticed it the few times she'd passed it. As she approached, she saw the outlines of the spire silhouetted against the evening sky. Other than that, the church disappeared into its surroundings, mostly because it was so much smaller than either of the homes flanking it, and had none of the expensive details. The walls were made of clapboard siding, and despite the new construction, the place already looked weathered. She had to climb over the dune to reach the parking lot on the street side. And here, there was more evidence of recent activity. An overflowing dumpster, a fresh stack of plywood by the door, and a large work van parked near the entrance. The front door was propped open, illuminated by a soft cone of light, though the rest of the building looked dark. She walked toward the entrance and stepped inside. Looking around, she could see that the place had a long way to go. The floor was concrete, the drywall looked only half complete, and there were no seats or pews. Dust coated every exposed 2x4. Yet straight ahead, where Ronnie could imagine Pastor Harris preaching on Sundays, her father was sitting behind a new piano that looked utterly out of place. An old aluminum lamp attached to an extension cord provided the only illumination. He hadn't heard her come in, and he continued to play, though she didn't recognize the song. It seemed almost contemporary, unlike the music he usually played, but even to her ears, it sounded unfinished somehow. Her dad seemed to realize the same thing because he stopped for a moment, appeared to think of something new, and started over from the beginning. This time, she heard the subtle variations he made. They were an improvement, but the melody still wasn't right. She felt a rush of pride that she still had the ability not only to interpret music, but to imagine possible variations. When she was younger, it was this talent above all else that had amazed her father. He started over again, making further changes, and as she watched him, she knew he was happy. Though music wasn't part of her life anymore, it had always been part of his, and she suddenly felt guilty for taking that away from him. Looking back, she remembered being angry at the thought that he was trying to get her to play. But had he really been trying to do that? Had it really been about her? Or had he played because it was an essential aspect of who he was? She wasn't sure, but watching him, she felt moved by what he'd done. The serious way he considered every note, and the ease with which he made changes, made her realize how much he'd given up as a result of her childish demand. As he played, he coughed once, then again, before stopping the song. He coughed some more, the sound thick and mucousy, and when it continued unabated, she broke into a run to reach him. "Dad?" she cried. "Are you okay?" He looked up, and for some reason, the coughing began to subside. By the time she bent down next to him, he was only wheezing slightly. "I'm okay," he said, his voice weak. "There's just so much dust in here. It just gets to me after a while. It happens every time." She stared at him, thinking he looked a little pale. "Are you sure that's it?" "Yeah, I'm sure." He patted her hand. "What are you doing here?"
"Jonah told me you were here."
"I guess you caught me, huh?" She waved it off. "It's okay, Dad. It's a gift, right?" When he didn't respond, she motioned to the keyboard, remembering all the songs they'd written together. "What was that you were playing? Are you writing a new song?"
"Oh, that," he said. "Trying to write one is more like it. It's just something I've been working on. No big deal."
"It was good."
"No, it wasn't. I don't know what's wrong with it. You might. You were always better at composing than I was. But I just can't seem to get it right. It's like I'm doing everything backwards."
"It was good," she insisted. "And it was more modern than what you usually play." He smiled.
"You noticed that, huh? It didn't start out that way. To be honest, I don't know what's happening to me. Maybe you've been listening to my iPod."
He smiled.
"No, I can assure you that I haven't."
She looked around her. "So when's the church going to be finished?"
"I don't know. I think I told you that the insurance didn't cover all the damage. It stalled for the time being."
"What about the window?"
"I'm still going to finish it."
He pointed to a plywood-covered opening on the wall behind him.
"That's where it'll go, even if I have to install it myself."
"You know how to do that?" Ronnie asked in disbelief.
"Not yet."
She smiled. "Why is there a piano in here, if the church isn't finished? Aren't you worried it's going to get stolen?"
"It wasn't supposed to be delivered until the church was finished, and technically, it's not supposed to be in here.
Pastor Harris hopes to find someone who's willing to store it. But with no completion date in sight, it's not as easy as it sounds." He turned to peek out the doorway and seemed surprised that night had fallen.
"What time is it?"
"It's a little after 9.
"Oh, geez,"
he said, starting to rise.
"I didn't realize the time. I'm supposed to camp out with Jonah tonight. I should probably get him something to eat."
"Already taken care of." He smiled. But as he gathered up his sheet music and turned out the light in the church, she was struck by how tired and frail he looked.
Chapter 25. Steve. Ronnie was right, he thought. The song was definitely modern. He hadn't been lying when he told her that it hadn't started out that way. In the first week, he'd tried to approximate something by Schumann. For a few days after that, he'd been inspired more by Grieg. After that, it was Saint-Saëns he heard in his head. But in the end, nothing felt right. Nothing he did captured the same feeling he'd had when he'd recorded those first simple notes on a scrap of paper. In the past, he worked to create music that he fantasized would live for generations. This time, he didn't. Instead, he experimented. He tried to let the music present itself, and little by little, he realized he'd stopped trying to echo the great composers and was content to finally trust himself. Not that he was there yet, because he wasn't. It wasn't right, and there was a possibility that it would never be right, but somehow this felt okay to him. He wondered if this had been his problem all along, that he'd spent his life emulating what had worked for others. He played music written by others hundreds of years earlier. He searched for God during his walks on the beach because it had worked for Pastor Harris. Here and now, with his son sitting beside him on a dune outside his house and staring through a pair of binoculars, despite the fact he most likely wouldn't see a thing, he wondered if he'd made those choices less because he thought others had the answers and more because he was afraid to trust his own instincts. Perhaps his teachers had become his crutch, and in the end, he had been afraid to be himself. "Hey, Dad?"
"Yeah, Jonah?"
"Are you going to come visit us in New York?"
"Nothing would make me happier."
"Because I think Ronnie will talk to you now."
"I would hope so."
"She's changed a lot, don't you think?"
Steve put down the binoculars. "I think we've all changed a lot this summer."
"Yeah," he said. "I think I've gotten taller for one thing."
"You definitely have.
And you've learned how to make a stained glass window."
He seemed to think about that.
"Hey, Dad?"
"Yeah?"
"I think I want to learn to stand on my head."
Steve hesitated, wondering where on earth that came from. "Can I ask why?"
"I like being upside down. I don't know why, but I think I'll need you to hold my legs, at least in the beginning."
"I'd be glad to." They were silent for a long time. It was a balmy, starlit night, and as he reflected on the beauty of his surroundings, Steve felt a sudden rush of contentment. About spending the summer with his kids, about sitting on the dune with his son and talking about nothing important. He'd gotten used to days like these and dreaded the thought that they would soon be ending.
"Hey, Dad?"
"Yeah, Jonah?"
"It's kind of boring out here."
"I think it's peaceful," Steve responded.
"But I can barely see anything."
"You can see the stars and hear the waves."
"I hear them all the time. They sound the same every day."
"When do you want to start practicing standing on your head?"
"Maybe tomorrow."
Steve put his arm around his son.
"What's wrong? You sound kind of sad."
"Nothing." Jonah's voice was barely audible.
"Are you sure?"
"Can I go to school here?" he asked. "And live with you?" Steve knew he'd have to tread carefully.
"What about your mom?"
"I love Mom, and I miss her too, but I like it here. I like spending time with you. You know, making the window, flying kites, just hanging out. I've had so much fun, I don't want it to end."
Steve drew him close. "I love being with you too. The best summer of my life."
"But if you're in school, it's not as if we'd be together like we are now.
Maybe you could homeschool me."
Jonah's voice was soft, almost scared, and to Steve, he actually sounded his age. The realization made his throat tighten. He hated what he had to say next, even though he had no choice.
"I think your mom would miss you if you stayed with me."
"Maybe you could move back.
Maybe you and Mom could get married again.
Steve took a deep breath, hating this. I know this is hard and doesn't seem fair. I wish there were a way I could change that, but I can't. You need to be with your mom. She loves you so much, and she wouldn't know what to do without you. But I love you, too. I never want you to forget that.
Jonah nodded as though he'd expected Steve's response.
Are we still going to Fort Fisher tomorrow?
If you want to. And afterwards, maybe we can go to the water slides.
There are water slides there?
No, but there's a place not too far from there. We just have to remember to bring our suits.
Okay, Jonah said, sounding more animated.
Maybe we'll go to Chuck E. Cheese's, too.
Really?
If you want to, we can make it happen.
Okay, he said, I want to.
Jonah was quiet again before finally reaching for the cooler. When he pulled out a plastic bag of cookies, Steve knew enough not to say anything.
Hey, Dad?
Yeah.
Do you think the turtles will hatch tonight?
I don't think they're quite ready yet, but it shouldn't be long.
Jonah brought his lips together but said nothing, and Steve knew his son was thinking about leaving again. He squeezed him a little closer, but inside he felt something break, something he knew would never quite heal.
Early the next morning, Steve stared down the beach, knowing that if he walked, he would do so simply to enjoy the morning. God, he came to realize, wasn't there. At least for him, anyway. But that made sense, now that he thought about it. If pinpointing God's presence were really that simple, then he supposed the beaches would be more crowded in the mornings. They would be filled with people on their own quests, instead of people jogging or walking their dogs or fishing in the surf. The search for God's presence, he understood now, was as much of a mystery as God himself. And what was God, if not a mystery? Funny, though, that it took him so long to see it that way. He spent the day with Jonah, just as they'd planned the night before. The fort was probably more interesting to him than Jonah, since he understood some of the history of the war between the states and knew that Wilmington was the last major functioning port in the Confederacy. The water slides, however, were far more exciting for Jonah than they were for Steve. Everyone was responsible for carrying his own mat up to the top, and while Jonah was strong enough the first couple of times, Steve soon had to take over. He honestly felt as though he were going to die. Chuck E. Cheese's, a pizza parlor with dozens of video games, kept Jonah occupied for another couple of hours. They played three games of air hockey, accumulated a few hundred game tickets, and after cashing in the tickets, walked out with two squirt guns, three bouncy balls, a packet of colored pencils, and two erasers. He didn't even want to think about how much it had cost him. It was a good day, a day of laughter, but wearying. After spending some time with Ronnie, he went to bed. Exhausted, he fell asleep within minutes.
Chapter 26. Ronnie. After her dad and Jonah had taken off for the day, Ronnie went to look for Blaze, hoping to catch her before she was due at the aquarium. She figured she had nothing to lose. The worst that could happen was that Blaze would blow her off or reject her out of hand, which would leave her in the same position she was already in. She didn't expect Blaze to suddenly change her mind and didn't want to get her hopes up. But it was hard not to. Will had a point. Blaze wasn't anything like Marcus, who had no conscience at all. And she had to be feeling just a little guilty, right? It didn't take long to find her. Blaze was sitting on the dune near the pier, watching the surfers. She said nothing as Ronnie walked up. Ronnie wasn't even sure where to start, so she began with the obvious. "Hi, Blaze," she said. Blaze said nothing, and Ronnie collected herself before going on. "I know you probably don't want to talk to me.
You look like an Easter egg. Ronnie glanced at the outfit she was required to wear at the aquarium. Turquoise shirt with the aquarium logo, white shorts, and white shoes. I tried to get them to change the uniform to black, but they wouldn't let me. Too bad. Black's your color. Blaze flashed a quick smile. What do you want? Ronnie swallowed. I wasn't trying to pick up Marcus that night. He came on to me, and I don't know why he said what he did, other than because he wanted to make you jealous. I'm sure you don't believe me, but I want to let you know I never would have done something like that to you. I'm not that kind of person. It had all come out in a rush, but she had said it now. Blaze paused, then said, I know. It wasn't the answer Ronnie had expected. Then why did you put those things in my bag? She blurted out. Blaze squinted up at her. I was mad at you, because it was obvious he liked you. Ronnie bit back a response that would have put an immediate end to the conversation, giving Blaze the opportunity to go on. Blaze focused on the surfers again. I see you've been spending a lot of time with Will this summer. He said you two used to be friends. Yeah, we were, she said. A long time ago. He's nice. You're lucky. She wiped her hands on her pants. My mom's going to marry her boyfriend. After she told me, we got into this really big fight, and she kicked me out of the house. She changed the locks and everything. I'm sorry to hear that, Ronnie said. And she was. I'll survive. Her comment made Ronnie think about the similarities in their lives. Divorce, anger, and rebellion, parents' remarriage. Yet despite those things, they were no longer the same at all. Blaze had changed since the beginning of the summer. Gone was the zest for life Ronnie had noticed when they first met. And Blaze seemed older, too, as if she'd aged years instead of weeks. But not in a good way. There were bags under her eyes and her skin was sallow. She'd lost weight, too. A lot of weight. In a strange way, it was as if Ronnie was seeing the person she might have become, and she didn't like what she saw. What you did to me was wrong, Ronnie said. But you can still make it right. Blaze shook her head slowly. Marcus won't let me. He said he wouldn't talk to me again. Listening to her robotic tone made Ronnie want to shake her. Blaze seemed to sense what Ronnie was thinking, and she sighed before going on. I don't have anywhere else to go. My mom called all the relatives and told them not to take me in. She told them that it's hard for her, but what I need is tough love right now. But I don't have any money to eat. And unless I want to sleep on the beach every night for the rest of my life, I have to do what Marcus tells me. When he's mad at me, he won't even let me shower at his place. And he won't give me any money from the shows we do, so I can't eat, either. He treats me like a dog sometimes, and I hate it. But who else do I have? Have you tried talking to your mom? What's the point? She thinks I'm a lost cause, and she hates me. I'm sure she doesn't hate you. You don't know her like I do. Ronnie flashed back on the time she had visited Blaze's house and seen the money tucked into the envelope. It didn't sound like the same mother, but Ronnie didn't want to say that. In the silence, Blaze pushed herself up and stood. Her clothes were dirty and rumpled, as though she'd been wearing them for a week straight. Which was probably true. I know what you want me to do, Blaze said, but I can't. And it's not because I don't like you. I do. I think you're nice, and I shouldn't have done what I did. But I'm as trapped as you are, and I don't think Marcus is done with you either. Ronnie stiffened. What do you mean? Blaze stood. He's been talking about you again. And not in a good way. I'd stay away from me if I were you. Before Ronnie could respond, Blaze started walking off. Hey, Blaze! She called out. Blaze slowly turned around. If you ever need something to eat or a place to stay, you know where I live. For an instant, Ronnie thought she saw not only a flash of gratitude, but something that reminded her of the smart, lively girl she'd first met in June. "And one more thing," Ronnie added. "That fire stuff you're doing with Marcus is crazy." Blaze gave her a sad smile. "Do you really think it's crazier than anything else in my life right now?" The following afternoon, Ronnie stood in front of her closet, knowing she had absolutely nothing to wear. Even if she was going to the wedding, which she still wasn't certain about, she didn't have anything remotely appropriate, unless it was a wedding with Ozzy Osbourne and his clan. But this was a formal black tie wedding. Tuxedos and gowns were required for guests, not just the wedding party. She'd never imagined attending something like this when she was packing for the summer back in New York. She hadn't even brought along the pair of black pumps her mom had purchased for her last Christmas, the ones that were still in the box. She really didn't understand why Will wanted her to come. Even if she found a way to look presentable, it wasn't as though she'd have anyone to talk to. Will was in the wedding party, which meant tons of pictures while she went to the reception. And he had to sit at the head table, so they wouldn't even be together for the meal. She'd probably end up sitting at a table with the governor or a senator or some family that had flown in on a private jet. Talk about awkward. Add in the fact that Susan hated her, and the whole thing was a bad idea. A really bad idea. Horrible in every conceivable way. On the other hand, when would she ever be invited to a wedding like this again? Supposedly, the house had undergone a major transformation in the last couple of weeks. A new temporary deck had been erected over the pool. Tents had been raised. Tens of thousands of flowers had been planted. And not only had lights been rented from one of the film studios in Wilmington, but the crew had come in and set up everything using stand-ins. The catering, everything from caviar to Cristal champagne, was being supplied by three different restaurants in Wilmington, and overseeing the whole operation was a chef Susan knew from Boston, who was supposedly once considered for the position of head chef at the White House. It was completely over the top. Certainly nothing she would ever want for her own wedding. Something beachside in Mexico with a dozen people in attendance was more her style. But she supposed that was part of the appeal of attending. She'd never go to another wedding like this for as long as she lived. Assuming, of course, she could find something to wear. Honestly, she didn't even know why she was searching her closet. She couldn't wave a magic wand and turn a pair of jeans into a dress, or pretend that a new partner hair would make someone overlook one of her concert t-shirts. The only halfway decent outfit she owned, the only one that Susan might not find repugnant if she'd simply stopped by on her way to a movie, was the outfit she wore to the aquarium. The one that made her look like an Easter egg. "What are you doing?" Jonah stood in the doorway, staring at her. "I need to find something to wear," she said.
"Are you going out?"
"No, I meant to wear to the wedding." He tilted his head.
"You're getting married?"
"Of course not. Will's sister is getting married."
"What's her name?"
"Megan."
"Is she nice?"
Ronnie shook her head. "I don't know. I've never met her."
"Then why are you going to her wedding?"
"Because Will asked me to go. That's the way it works," she explained. "He can bring a guest to the wedding. I'm supposed to be the guest."
"Oh,"
he said.
"What are you going to wear?"
"Nothing. I don't have anything." He motioned toward her.
"What you're wearing is nice."
"The Easter egg outfit.
Figures."
She tugged at her shirt.
"I can't wear this. It's a formal wedding. I'm supposed to wear a gown." "Do you have a gown in the closet?"
"No."
"Then why are you standing there?"
"Right," she thought, closing the door. She flopped down on her bed.
"You're right,"
she said. "I can't go. It's as simple as that."
"Do you want to go?"
Jonah asked, curiously.
In an instant, her thoughts flashed from absolutely not, to kind of, and finally to, yeah, I do. She tucked her legs up under her. Will wants me to go. It's important to him. And it would be something to see. Then why don't you buy a gown? Because I don't have any money, she said. Oh, he said. That's easy to fix. He went to his collection of toys in the corner. Wedged in at one end was a model of an airliner. He picked it up and brought it over, unscrewing the nose of the plane. As he began dumping the contents on her bed, Ronnie's jaw dropped at the sight of all the cash he'd accumulated. There had to be at least a few hundred dollars. It's my bank, he said. He wiped his nose. I've been saving for a while. Where did you get all this? Jonah pointed to a $10 bill. This one was for not telling Dad I saw you that night at the carnival. He pointed to a single. This one was for not telling Dad that you were making out with Will. He continued to point at various bills. This one was for the guy with the blue hair, and this was from Liar's Poker. This one was for the time that you snuck out after your curfew. I get it, she said. But still, she blinked. You saved it all? What else was I supposed to do with it? He answered. Mom and Dad buy me everything I need. All I have to do is beg long enough. It's pretty easy to get what I want. You just have to know how to work it. Mom needs me to cry, but Dad needs me to explain why I deserve it. She smiled. Her brother, the blackmailer / psychologist. Amazing. So, I don't really need it. And I like Will. He makes you happy. Yeah, she thought. He does. You're a pretty good little brother, you know? Yeah, I know. And you can have it all on one condition. Here it comes, she thought. Yes? I'm not going to go dress shopping with you. It's boring. It didn't take long for her to make a decision. Deal. Ronnie stared at herself, hardly able to recognize the image in the mirror. It was the morning of the wedding, and she had spent the past 4 days trying on pretty much every appropriate gown in the city, walking back and forth in various pairs of new shoes, and sitting for hours in the hair salon. It had taken her almost an hour of curling and blowing to do her hair the way the girl at the salon had taught her. As Ronnie sat in the chair, she also asked advice about makeup, and the girl had given her some suggestions that Ronnie had followed carefully. The dress. There weren't all that many good choices despite the number of stores she'd visited. Featured a deep V-neck and black sequins, a far cry from anything she'd ever imagined wearing. The night before, she'd filed and painted her nails on her own, taking her time, pleased that she hadn't smeared any of the polish. I don't know you, Ronnie told her reflection, turning this way and that. I've never seen you before. She tugged at her dress, adjusting it slightly. She looked pretty good, she had to admit. She smiled. And definitely good enough for the wedding. She slipped into her shoes on the way out the door and headed down the hallway to the living room. Her dad was reading his Bible again, and Jonah was watching cartoons, as usual. When her dad and her brother looked up, they did visible double takes. Holy crap, Jonah said. Her dad turned to glare at him. You shouldn't say that word. What word? Jonah said. You know the word I'm talking about. Sorry, Dad, he said, chastised. I meant Jiminy crap. He tried again. Ronnie and her dad laughed, and Jonah turned from one to the other. What? Nothing, her dad said. Jonah moved nearer to inspect her more closely. What happened to the purple in your hair? He asked. It's gone. Ronnie bobbed her curls. Temporarily, she said. Is it okay? Before her dad could answer, Jonah piped up. You look normal again. But you don't look like my sister.
You look wonderful, her dad said quickly. Surprising herself, Ronnie breathed a sigh of relief.
Is the dress okay?
It's perfect, her dad answered.
And my shoes? I'm not sure they go with the dress.
They're just right.
I tried to do my makeup and my nails. Before she even finished, her dad shook his head.
You've never been more beautiful, he said. In fact, I don't know if there's anyone more beautiful in the entire world.
He'd said the same thing 100 times before. Dad, he means it, Jonah interrupted. You look awesome. I'm being honest. I barely recognize you.
She frowned at him in mock indignation.
So you're saying you don't like the way I usually look?
He shrugged.
No one likes purple hair except weirdos.
When she laughed, she caught her dad smiling at her.
Wow,
was all he could say. Half an hour later, she was pulling through the gates of the Blakely estate, her heart racing. They had just run the gauntlet of highway patrol officers stationed along the road to check IDs, and now they were being stopped by men in suits who wanted to park their car. Her dad tried calmly to explain that he was simply dropping her off, but his response made no sense to any of the 3 valets. They couldn't seem to grasp the fact that a guest at the wedding didn't even have her own car. And the improvements. Ronnie had to admit, the place was as spectacular as a movie set. There were flowers everywhere, the hedge was trimmed to perfection, and even the brick and stucco wall that surrounded the property had been freshly painted. When they were finally able to make their way to the central roundabout, her dad stared at the house, which was growing larger in the foreground. Eventually, he turned to her. She wasn't used to seeing her father surprised by anything, but she could hear it in his voice.
This is Will's house?
This is it, she said. She knew what he'd say, that it was huge, or he didn't realize how wealthy the family was, or did she feel like she belonged in a place like this? Instead, he smiled at her without a trace of self-consciousness.
What a lovely place for a wedding.
He drove carefully, thankfully drawing no extra attention to the old car they were driving. It was actually Pastor Harris's car, an old Toyota sedan with a boxy style that was out of date as soon as it came off the production line in the 1990s. But it ran, and right now that was good enough. Her feet were already aching. How some women wore pumps every day was beyond her. Even when she was seated, they felt like instruments of torture. She should have wrapped her toes in Band-Aids. And her dress obviously hadn't been designed to wear while sitting. It was digging into her ribs, making it hard to breathe. Then again, maybe she was just too nervous to breathe. Her dad made his way around the traffic circle, his gaze fixed on the house just as hers had been the first time she'd seen it. Even though she should have been used to it by now, the place still felt overwhelming to her. Add in the guests, she'd never seen so many tuxedos and formal gowns in her life, and she couldn't